Suns Week and all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Let's tip off the Sunny Side of Sports with a new National Basketball Association shooting record by Golden State Warriors guard Klay Thompson. The AP's David Schuster reports from Chicago.
Klay Thompson put on a record-breaking performance as the Warriors crushed the Bulls 149-124. Thompson hit an NBA record 14 three-pointers, of which 10 came in the opening half. Oh, and by the way, he ended up with 52 points on the night. Thompson says he felt a game like this coming.
I always look at the bright side, and we've been winning games, and I've been shooting a great percentage other than from the three-point line, so I knew it was going to fall eventually.
The Warriors as a team scored 92 points in the opening half and led by as many as 45 in the game, and their 24 three-pointers was one shy of a league record, with 17 of those coming in the opening half, yet another record. David Schuster, Chicago.
Thanks, David. Klay Thompson broke teammate Stephen Curry's NBA record for three-pointers in a game. Curry made 13 three-pointers against the New Orleans Pelicans back in 2016. On Monday night in Chicago, Curry made 2 three-pointers and scored 23 points as the defending champion Warriors improved to 7 wins and 1 loss for the season. Elsewhere around the NBA, the Milwaukee Bucks are now the league's only unbeaten team after they beat the visiting Toronto Raptors 124-109. The Bucks have won 7 straight games to start the season, while the Raptors now have 6 victories and 1 defeat. Now, the game lost some of its luster because star players for both teams, Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Bucks and Kawhi Leonard of the Raptors, were sidelined. Antetokounmpo missed the game because of the NBA's concussion protocol, while the Raptors rested Leonard. In other NBA games Monday night, the San Antonio Spurs edged their Texas rival, the Dallas Mavericks, 113-108 in overtime in San Antonio. DeMar DeRozan scored 34 points for the Spurs, while highly touted Slovenian rookie Luka Doncic had 31 points for the Mavericks. In more results, the Minnesota Timberwolves topped LeBron James in the visiting Los Angeles Lakers 124-120. Jimmy Butler scored 32 points for the T-Wolves, while LeBron scored 29 points to go with 10 rebounds and 7 assists for the Lakers. The new-look Lakers with LeBron leading the attack are off to a slow start with 2 wins and 5 losses. In 5 more scores from Monday night, the Philadelphia 76ers clipped the wings of the visiting Atlanta Hawks 113-92. The host Denver Nuggets defeated the New Orleans Pelicans 116-111. The Portland Trail Blazers scored a 103-93 road victory over the Indiana Pacers. The Sacramento Kings also won on the road, beating the Miami Heat 123-112. And in an all-New York City matchup, the New York Knicks defeated the Brooklyn Nets 115-96. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
This is Dikembe Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
You need to get to the net, thanks to Dikembe. That's Congolese giant Dikembe Mutombo, who was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame in 2015. Turning to African athletics, an update now on the Kenyan Nancy Kiprop, who we heard from on last Friday's Sunny Side of Sports. The 39-year-old Kiprop set a personal best of 2 hours, 22 minutes, and 46 seconds on Sunday in the Minova Frankfurt Marathon in Germany. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with Nancy Kiprop after her run. Here's Andy.
Nancy Kiprop ran a personal best in the Minerva Frankfurt Marathon, bringing her best down to 2:22. Very impressive indeed in cold, windy conditions. And as we've already heard from Nancy recently, prize money all helps to fund a children's school project she has back in Iten in Kenya. Nancy, was it a hard race out there today? Even though you ran your fastest, it was windy and 6 degrees centigrade at the start. Was it tough?
Yeah, it was a tough race, a strong field, but I'm happy that I ran my PP. My training was going on well, and I knew I would do something with my PP despite the weather and despite the strong field.
This has been a really good year for you. You won the Vienna City Marathon this April, and you won Vienna before that as well, and now finishing inside the top 10 and finishing in 2:22 in Frankfurt. Is everything coming right for you in training?
Yeah, indeed, it has been a very good year for me. I started very well and I ended the year successfully, and I'm happy because I know that new things are coming ahead. Next year is a good year for me. Due to my performance, I know things will work well for me.
You've told us about how important it is for you, the children's project, the school in Iten, and all the things you do for them, and you've built that up, and how anything you earn from running clearly is a help for the school. So was that extra motivation today, or when you're on the start line, are you really just thinking about the race?
About the school, I know I really ran good. The time was good, and I know good things are ahead of me. Good races and maybe good money that will help me to continue with my project.
If you don't mind me saying so, I'm looking at your date of birth, you're 39, you're soon going to be what they call a master's runner or a veteran. Obviously, you're getting faster. So as you enter your 40s, you don't think that you're going to be slowing down, it seems.
It will be nice to be in master's, and with me, age doesn't matter. What's important is the capability or the ability to do the thing. And if I'm still working hard, I'm going on well, and I know age doesn't matter a lot.
Clearly, also, we've had evidence in Frankfurt today, because on the men's side, Mark Kiptoo from Kenya ran 2:07:50, and he's 42, and that was a Masters world record. So Mark Kiptoo is showing you the way, and I think you are showing other women the way. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I feel it. I think marathon is something to do with age. It matters a lot. You have to be mature enough. Your bones should be strong. Yeah.
Nancy Kiprop, congratulations on your performance in Minerva Frankfurt Marathon, and all the best with the school project in Iten in Kenya. Thank you, Nancy.
You're welcome.
That's Kenyan athlete Nancy Kiprop. And Nancy was talking with the energetic Andy Edwards in Frankfurt, Germany. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. At the end of Monday's show, I mentioned how British star driver Lewis Hamilton won his fifth career Formula One championship at the Mexican Grand Prix in Mexico City. For more reaction from Hamilton, let's turn to my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. After winning his fifth F1 championship, Lewis Hamilton sat down for an interview and said despite a difficult year, he never stopped believing.
So I truly believed from the beginning of the year that we could, even when we had the difficult races. A difficult race would have been China. A difficult race would have been Montreal. And there had been several. I remember it was a difficult race, Baku, for example, which ultimately I ended up winning, but it was a really, really tough race. And I remember there thinking, geez, I'm struggling in this car, and I don't know if I hope that I can finally find the synergy between us so we can go out and deliver great results. And then soon after that, good things started to happen. But I never for a moment lost doubt or lost belief within this team, in my guys and or in myself. So I'm just so happy that, you know, you could definitely come away from that break and not perform well and make mistakes, but didn't lose vision, didn't lose sight of what I was trying to achieve.
With his fifth career title, the Mercedes driver has entered the history books with only two other men, retired German racer Michael Schumacher and the late Argentine great Juan Manuel Fangio. So what does a guy do after becoming the third driver in F1 history to win five world titles?
You know, it's really weird because everyone's like, hey, you should be going out partying. But I just feel content. I don't need anything. I just want to enjoy, harness the feeling and try to realize what it is that I've just done. Because for me, it's been another day of racing, which I'm really grateful for. But when you think of Fangio, who's for me the godfather of the racing drivers, you know, he had five and now I have five. It doesn't connect in the moment. You know, it doesn't feel real, but I'm very humbled and very just mega, mega, incredibly grateful for all the people around me who've helped me, because there's been a lot of people along the journey.
And Lewis took a moment to personally thank those people who have been along for the ride with this Twitter message to his fans.
Okay, guys, I'm out. It's been an incredible journey. This year has been the toughest year so far, but I know that there's more great things to come. More big tough challenges up ahead. We still have a title to win for the team, so that's my sole focus now. But I'm heading to Los Angeles. I'm going to hopefully see my dogs tomorrow and then back to the UK where I'm going to see the team. But I just really want to say a big thank you to everyone that's come out and supported me throughout the year, traveled around the world. It means the world to me. Thank you so much to Team LH. And I hope that wherever you are, whatever you're doing, I hope that you can have a bit of a celebratory drink for me, whatever it may be, even if it's tea. And enjoy the moment, because we've done this together. We win and we lose together. And here's to many more days. Whatever you're going through, keep pushing, keep fighting. I truly believe in you, and you just got to make sure you believe in yourself. So God bless you, and hope you have an amazing weekend. Happy Halloween.
Where there's nothing spooky about Lewis's career-high achievement. And here's a fun fact. More people have walked on the moon than have won five crowns in the 68-year history of Formula One racing. Only Michael Schumacher has more championships at seven, but all eyes are on Lewis Hamilton to even surpass that. More sporty news to come. Sonny, back to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. A big parade is planned in Boston on Wednesday to celebrate the city's World Series champion baseball team, the Red Sox. The Red Sox won their ninth World Series title and fourth in the past 15 years, by beating the Los Angeles Dodgers 4-1. Stepping up to the plate for some post-World Series analysis is our friend Dan Friedel. Sporty greetings, Dan.
Hey, Sonny, it's good to be here talking about the Fall Classic. And here we are in the middle of the second day of the baseball offseason, and I'm already looking forward to spring training when the pitchers and catchers report to Florida and Arizona in February.
Well, before we look forward to spring training, Dan, let's look back at the 114th World Series. The game's two highest paid pitchers, David Price and Clayton Kershaw, their contracts put together have been estimated at $500 million. Amazing contracts. Well, a lot of Red Sox fans, Dan, they say David Price was priceless in the World Series. Priceless. 1-2 games. Your thoughts on David Price?
You know, a lot of people thought that he might have become the most valuable player of the World Series because he pitched so well. Instead, that honor went to Steve Pierce, kind of unheralded utility player in his career, who had a couple of big hits for the Red Sox in the last two games of the series. But Price, you know, he has had a tough run in Boston. One of the best regular season pitchers in baseball, coming out of college at Vanderbilt, in the southern U.S. state of Tennessee as a really high draft pick by the Tampa Bay Rays, and actually getting some good experience in the World Series and in the high-pressure moments of the playoffs in his first season in the major leagues, pitching for the Rays in the playoffs as they made it to the World Series, eventually losing to the Philadelphia Phillies that year, going on to become one of the most consistent left-handed pitchers, long, lanky left-handed pitcher in baseball, put himself in position to get this big contract with the Red Sox, and it's a lot of pressure going to play in Fenway Park with the rabid fan base. You know, the big story of the Red Sox history is that they gave up on Babe Ruth and sent him to the New York Yankees, and Babe Ruth wound up becoming one of the greatest players ever in baseball history, and the Red Sox never were able to overcome that until the 2004 World Series when they finally dispatched all the ghosts from that bad move. And now the Red Sox have won, I think, three World Series since then. David Price had a tough time adjusting to Boston with the microscope of the Fenway Park crowd being so close to him and the close watching from all the analysts. Red Sox being one of the marquee franchises in all of baseball, and he really rebounded in the postseason this year and acquitted himself extremely well in the face of some adversity in his first couple of years in Boston, and he was glad. He was glad to overcome that, and he wasn't afraid to tell people about how they might have given him too harsh criticism in his first couple seasons in Boston.
What about Clayton Kershaw, Dan, another left-handed pitcher? Will this be the last time we see him in a Dodgers uniform?
I think the question about Kershaw is whether another team out there is going to be willing to step up and match the kind of contract that he has with the Dodgers. You know, he made a lot of waves when he signed that extension with Los Angeles, the only team that he's ever played for. One of the first pitchers to get an over $200 million contract, I think, over 10 years. And when he signed that contract in his middle 20s, it seemed like it was absolutely worth it. I mean, he was the kind of pitcher who could take a team to the playoffs all by himself. I mean, there were some stretches in the first part of his career where he was basically unhittable for weeks at a time. I mean, he would get rolling in June and July and August and get through an entire game, nine innings, complete game, only giving up one or two hits, only giving up a couple of base runners, getting through the whole game with only about 100 pitches and striking out, you know, between 10 and 15 batters. I mean, it looked like Clayton Kershaw was going to be the number one pitcher of his generation. And some would argue that he still has been. But the question is whether he can continue to pitch at that level in his 30s. He's had some injuries over the last couple of years, a bad back, and kind of has a little bit of non-traditional delivery. We'll see if he's able to hold up for a number of years in the future. And it really looked like he got worn out in the postseason this year. He pitched pretty well in the couple of series leading up to the World Series, but he did wind up struggling in the World Series against the Red Sox and gave up a couple home runs early in Game 5 on Sunday night, and the Red Sox really continued the momentum and ultimately won the series. I mean, Kershaw is going to probably make it to the Hall of Fame. The question is whether he has five good years to go or whether he's on the back end of his career already.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm talking with Dan Friedell about the recent World Series baseball competition won by the Boston Red Sox. Dan, let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to the proud Puerto Rican Alex Cora, winning the World Series in his first year as manager of the Red Sox. Your thoughts on Cora?
You know, Alex Cora was never an outstanding baseball player during his career, but he was a player who was involved in a lot of big games, experienced, playing in the American League and playing in the National League, played for both the Red Sox and the Dodgers in his career. He was actually on the field for two World Series championship celebrations at Dodger Stadium 2 years in a row, because last year he was an assistant coach with the World Series champion Houston Astros. And then in the offseason, he's hired by the Boston Red Sox with the challenge of getting the Red Sox to the World Series, and he does it again. And Cora acquitted himself really well in the regular season. I mean, the Red Sox had the best record in baseball the whole year, playing in a very competitive division, the American League East, that had not only the New York Yankees, but the Tampa Bay Rays playing quite well. The American League had another team with over 100 wins, and that was the Houston Astros. The Red Sox had no trouble dispatching the Astros in the American League Championship Series. Cora really was able to relate to his players, I think, in a special way and get them prepared to play well on the pressure-filled stage of the baseball playoffs. I mean, you look at some of these guys who had great seasons for the Red Sox, a pitcher like Chris Sale, who struggled a little bit in the playoffs and it was kind of worn out toward the end of the season. You have J.D. Martinez, who had, I believe, an ankle injury during most of the World Series, and he did hit a home run in Game 5, but he struggled a little bit. You had Mookie Betts, who was probably the most outstanding player in the American League this year, who also struggled a little bit in the playoffs, but he stuck with those guys, and he was able to put his other players, guys like Steve Pierce, who was the eventual most valuable player in the World Series, guys like Jackie Bradley Jr., who we talked about a couple of weeks ago, who performed exceedingly well in the American League Championship Series against Houston. Even a guy like Mitch Moreland, kind of an unheralded first baseman, who hit an important home run in Game 4 when it looked like the Dodgers maybe were going to run away with Game 4. Moreland hit a three-run homer to make it 4-3. And put the Red Sox in position to ultimately win that game. So Cora, you know, he's only 43 years old. He's closer in age to a lot of the players, and he really was able to nurture them in this big moment of the World Series.
Dan, we have about a minute left in the show. Do you think the Dodgers can get back to the World Series for a third year in a row?
You know, the other thing that's interesting about this is that Dave Roberts, who's the manager of the Dodgers, had perhaps the most important single play in that 2004 season in which the Red Sox wound up winning the World Series, stealing an important base that allowed the Red Sox to get the momentum back and beat the Yankees and eventually get to the World Series that year. Roberts is a young, relatable manager as well. He's got a lot of young guys on the Dodgers. The Dodgers have plenty of money. The National League is not as strong as the American League. They have a lot of experience. They have a really good young shortstop who's going to be back next year after an injury. That's Corey Seager, who was an outstanding player and then was injured this year. So I don't see why the Dodgers can't find a way to get back to the World Series in 2019 for the third year in a row.
Dan Friedel, thanks for stepping up to the plate with that World Series commentary. Thank you, Dan.
Sonny, happy to be with you once again, and maybe we'll talk about Klay Thompson sometime soon.
Yes, the shooter for the Golden State Warriors. Thank you, Dan. And that wraps up the October 30th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nashwan Kali. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, I'm Lienor Moudou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will have an exclusive interview with Dr. Helena Ndube, Namibian ophthalmologist notable for her charitable work among sufferers of eye-related illnesses in Namibia. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a look at who really won in the Cameroon presidential election. Guest host Vincent McCoury discusses Cameroon's newly elected president, Paul Biya, and the election that was marred by violence and low voter turnout. Cameroon politics on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study from a professor and evolutionary biologist at the University of California, Riverside, suggests since tall people have more cells than normal-sized people, they are at an increased risk of cancer. To reach his findings, Professor Leonard Nunney examined and analyzed the data from four major studies, which covered 23 cancer categories. Nunney says he found that in each of the studies he evaluated, he found that they established that tall people have an increased risk of cancer. He adds that the risk increases by 10% for every 10 centimeters in additional height. In a press release quote, Nunney says that height increases cell numbers and that having more cells directly increases cancer risk. The professor's study was published in the journal The Proceedings of the Royal Society B. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
She said she too young, don't want no man.
Starting Monday, November 5th, tune into Border Crossings to win a free copy of Now 68, featuring top songs from a variety of artists. This CD features Calvin Harris's One Kiss, along with Ariana Grande's God is a Woman, and many other hit songs. Tune in to Border Crossings to win.